Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. grain export inspections picking up momentum in the latest reporting week. Corn leading the board and wheat and soybeans showing steady movement. Now, according to USDA's Federal Grain Inspection Service, total inspected volumes 2.84 million metric tons for the week that ended November 6th. Now, that's slightly below the previous week, but it is above the same week 1 year ago. Corn topped all commodities 1.42 million metric tons, aided by strong movement through Gulf and interior regions as global buyers continue to secure fall harvest supplies. Export inspections show a mixed year-to-date picture. Overall volumes up modestly while commodity trends diverge. Through, again, November 6th, total grain inspections running about 1.5% above last year. It reflects stronger wheat and corn movement, and it's offset by notably weaker soybeans and sorghum. Again, corn, clear standout, running about 66% ahead of last year. Wheat continues to outperform, up about 19% year over year, on steady West Coast loadings and improved competitiveness. Barley modestly higher, up about 5%. But on the downside, beans remain well behind last season, down about 42% as Brazil's large crop and aggressive offers continue to dominate early season trade. Sorghum exports are also under pressure, about 63% lower than a year ago, reflecting tighter U.S. supplies and shifting demand. Weekly tally still shows corn leading current shipments, but the year-to-date story centers on the corn wheat strength versus soybean sorghum softness. Rainfall patterns across the South have become less predictable, and that shift reshaping how pasture, rangeland, and forage insurance performs, that's PRF, and according to new research from University of Arkansas economists, PRF remains the most widely used federal crop insurance product by acreage. But while the program itself hasn't changed, rainfall trends behind its rainfall index have. So it creates new gaps between expected and actual risk in many counties. Baseline analysis for 7 years from 2017 through 2024 shows most southern grids holding relatively stable loss ratios between 1.0, but also reveals clear differences from state to state when human enrollment choices are removed. So economists found that even small adjustments in interval strategy can meaningfully shift outcomes. When intervals were selected using a method that accounts for increasing rainfall inconsistency, the mean loss ratios edged higher. But the variation among grids widened significantly, so states like Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia showed more areas reaching or exceeding that standard loss ratio benchmark under the strategy, and states like Kentucky and Tennessee showed smaller changes reflecting steadier moisture patterns. So what's the real takeaway? Strategic PRF interval selection, not just participation, drives protection as rainfall patterns grow less predictable across the South. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The core aspects of the supply situation, how many animals we have, and the fact the industry is trying to put more pounds on each of them, has not changed. In my best assessment, the core of the demand story hasn't changed. That's why I'm driving home the MDM points is
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer.
The public still says Tease is leading and they want meat protein. The broader kind of business environment, what the international trade environment might look like and so forth, has probably ratcheted up in uncertainty in the last 3-4 weeks. That part has certainly rattled the markets, but a lot of the core base fundamentals haven't changed. And I think it's important for us to pause and reflect on that. And I hope we actually are, like, quote unquote, in the news less the next few months and those base fundamentals play out.
So we go from beef to dairy. Kansas State dairy specialist Mike Brook.
As we move into the early winter and bird migration has been underway now for a few months, actually, what are we seeing in terms of new cases of bird flu within our dairy herd across the United States? Well, as I look back through the data for the last 30 days, actually across the United States, in dairy animals, we've only seen one new reported case of bird flu, and that was out west. So here in the Midwest, it's actually been very, very quiet. And when you think about all of the testing that we're doing today, if it was out there, we would probably be finding it. Since May of this year, we've ran over 110,000 PCR tests for bird flu on milk samples and tissue samples sent in from various animals across the United States. So in the dairy industry, we're doing a lot to test for this. Most of you are aware that we do have a national milk testing strategy that went into effect almost a year ago now, that on a regular basis, we test raw milk coming out of silos at processing plants for the presence of bird flu. And that has helped us find a few herds across the United States that really weren't showing symptoms, but that has allowed us to find a few herds across the United States that were not showing symptoms, but it was found in the milk, and we've been able to address those situations very quickly. Couple other programs that are out there that are helping us keep track of whether or not we have issues with bird flu or the interstate movement of animals. Those animals have to be tested if they're dairy animals before they move across state lines. And we also have a dairy herd status program, which is a voluntary program that herds can enroll in that is also keeping track of whether or not we have issues with bird flu showing up in our dairy herds across the United States. So moving forward, we will continue with the testing, particularly with the milk surveillance testing program, as well as the animal movement program to make sure that we're not missing something. And over time, my guess is we will probably see bird flu disappear, as it often does over a period of a few years. And will it reappear again? Probably so, somewhere down the line. That has been the case over time. Whether or not it impacts dairy herds at that point in time is hard to say. Our friends on the poultry side, however, they do continue to see some new infections of bird flu across the United States and a few here in the Midwest as well. So I want to encourage our dairy farmers to continue to be observant of their animals. And if they do see signs, make sure you get the appropriate testing done. And many thanks to our people and our regulatory agencies that are involved in our testing programs that do seem to be effective in identifying when we might be having problems and getting those problems addressed quickly.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
The United Nations is recognizing 2026 as the International Year of the Woman Farmer with hopes of spotlighting the contributions of women in agriculture and agribusiness. Lisa Wary, a Pennsylvania farmer and member of the American Farm Bureau Women's Leadership Committee, says this is an important time to acknowledge the contributions of women in rural America.
Some of the key goals and objectives are to recognize and empower, to address barriers, to promote gender equality and support economic growth, and to enhance access with our education markets and other resources for women in the sector.
She said the American Farm Bureau Women's Committee has a full slate of programming for the year ahead, including the upcoming ACE Summit,
which is Advocate, Cultivate, and Empower. We're going to do that in D.C. in June, and that's going to roll right into the Women in Ag Survey, which will explore women's leadership and involvement, access to the industry, and identify barriers and opportunities and provide actionable insights to strengthen engagement and support systems. But the big thing is about how women play a vital role in American agriculture.
She says the survey is open to all women, not just those who directly make an income from production agriculture.
The survey is open to individuals 18 and older from the United States to Puerto Rico who have an interest or involvement in agriculture, and also those that work in production agriculture, agribusiness, education, advocacy, and related fields.
For more than a decade, school children have been prevented from purchasing whole or 2% milk in schools. But as American Farm Bureau Federation economist Danny Munch tells us, reversing that decision could be a benefit to kids as well as a positive step for improving the farm economy.
It was really supposed to be on top of efforts to reduce fat consumption, but we realized quickly that it didn't really relate to modern nutritional science. And that meant whole and 2% milk, the types most families buy at home, were taken off the menu, especially for school kids. Since then, milk consumption in schools has dropped. That's why there's been growing momentum to bring that choice back.
He said school milk accounts for almost 8% of fluid milk demand, so it's a significant market driver.
There were 4.86 billion school meals served in 2024, and 85% of students grab milk. Skim milk has no grams of fat, and 1% has about 2.5 grams of fat. So if we switch to 2% and whole milk, that would increase 5.5 to 8 grams of butterfat per serving to each of those kids. That would boost up returns for dairy farmers because of that higher value fluid milk market.
Retired Army Command Sergeant Major Matthew Rudder of South Carolina is the second winner of the AFBF Veteran Farmer Award of Excellence. The award, presented with the support of Farm Credit, goes to Rudder, who had an eventful 22 years in the Army.
I joined the Army in 1998 for college money and to serve my country and see the world. And I went to Germany initially. Before you know it, 22 years had passed. I started in the infantry. I switched over to military intelligence about 5 years in. I was in Kosovo, and then I've been to Iraq, and I've been to Afghanistan a few times.
Following Rudder's time in the service, he co-founded the nonprofit Project Victory Gardens to help veterans transition to civilian life with renewed purpose and hands-on agricultural skills.
Through that, we teach other veterans how to farm. We have a program called Farmer Boot Camp, and we have a Department of Defense SkillBridge agricultural internship in the state. And over the last few years, I think we have somewhere close to 300 people that have come through our programming. A lot of them are still farming. My guess would be around 75% are still involved in agriculture in some aspect of it.
Rudder was nominated for the Veteran Farmer Award of Excellence by his wife and said he had no expectation of winning the award until it was announced.
I was pretty shocked that I was even in the running. I think my wife might have been doing some award writing behind my back. I don't know. It's quite humbling.
Chad Smith, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And look, I don't doubt that there are edge cases. That is what this court's confronted just recently in FCC versus Consumer Research. And you said, look, what is a tax is sometimes very hard. What is revenue raising?
More highlights from the recent Supreme Court hearing on the use of tariffs by the Trump administration.
This is obviously revenue raising. Their own brief to the court says it's going to raise $4 trillion. And Justice Alito, you and your consumers research dissent, or Justice Gorsuch's dissent that you joined, said taxation is special and different. And it is the most powerful thing the government does. And the idea that Congress, when they know exactly how to write tariff and tax statutes, gave this power by implication through the word regulate, I think is very, very hard.
Well, you cite many different statutory provisions that impose tariffs. And you have a point if that's the relevant universe. What if the relevant universe is tariffs that are imposed in emergency situations?
Yes. So I think it cuts the other way. So, you know, as Justice Jackson said, it's when you're in an emergency situation, the statutes actually have to speak with more precision. The public needs to know because emergencies beget emergencies. And I would say the best way of understanding what Congress does in emergencies is to look at their emergency statutes. Not one has ever given the president a taxation power or a tariff power. We've had all sorts of emergencies for 238 years. No president has ever said, oh, the way to deal with that is I need to have a tariff authority. And as Justice Sotomayor said, IEEPA gives already a quota power, so you can get what the foreign policy piece of it is through that. I'd also say, Justice Alito, Dames and Moore, which the Chief Justice referred to earlier, I think is really important here, because the Solicitor General in that case made a similar argument to what you just heard on the claims provisions. He said it falls within regulate. Regulate is a capacious term. He said, Justice Alito, what you said, this is an emergency situation. And he said you've got to defer to the president on a major issue of national security about this very statute. And what did the court do? It rejected those arguments and said IEEPA doesn't cover
this. You say that this is not, this case does not, that these executive orders do not address an unusual and extraordinary threat. I understand that argument. Suppose that the facts were that it was suppose that there was an imminent threat of war, not a declared war, but an imminent threat of war with a very powerful enemy whose economy was heavily dependent on U.S. trade. Could a president under this provision impose a tariff as a way of trying to stave off that war? Or would you say, no, the president lacks that power?
Couldn't do tariff, but could do quota, embargo, all of those things.
Could do all those things, but the president could not impose a tariff. That's the one thing he couldn't do.
There's a category shift between a tariff and the other eight powers in IEEPA because it is revenue raising. So it's not a difference in degree or something like that. That's why, you know, I don't doubt tomorrow.
Even if the purpose of this has had nothing whatsoever to do with raising one penny. The president didn't want to raise one penny. The president wanted to deter aggression that would bring the United States into a war. You would say, no, can't do that.
Yeah, Justice Alito, I think you've said many times the purpose isn't what you look at. You look to actually what the government is doing. And if you disagree, if you think we're, you know, if you think, or excuse me, if you ruled for us and the president says, I need this power, he can go across the street to Congress tomorrow and get it by a simple majority through reconciliation. But if you vote for them, this power, as Justice Gorsuch said, as Justice Barrett said, is going to be stuck with us forever.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In terms of expectations, specifically for corn here,
Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago.
Basically, the trade has yields hovering around 185 to 186, slightly below the USDA's figure of 186.7. Some analysts have a closer to about 182 to 183 BPA. Essentially, if we take those numbers, the corn production could be such that, you know, if we get a yield of about 182 or lower, then that could push ending stocks under 2 billion bushels, which would be considered kind of a threshold that you don't want to cross, and it could actually end up being a bit bullish. So we'll see how that plays out. In terms of some of the general things that are impacting the corn market, basically seems like it's in a somewhat cautiously stable price range ahead of that report coming on Friday. Pressures haven't changed. It's still the supplies, the record Brazilian output, and a ethanol policy that's not completely been nailed down quite yet. Support is coming from competitive export pricing, potential yield downgrades, which we'll get that data on Friday, and improving sentiment overall based on the U.S.-China trade negotiations. In terms of wheat, the story there hasn't changed much either. The market basically is sitting with fundamentally heavy supplies, record large global supplies, cheap Black Sea exports, and, you know, Chinese buying that's pretty much fairly non-existent. Short-term bullish side of the equation, you're going to see some rebound. So if corn and soybeans can sustain any kind of rally, I think wheat's going to go along for the ride for sure. So we'll see how that plays out. In terms of soybeans, the major impacts at the moment are a bit of a balance between supportive domestic fundamentals. You got the strong crush margins, steady U.S. demand. You've got the yield numbers that have been coming down as harvest has progressed. Now, harvest is pretty much almost done, in my opinion, my estimation. You got bearish global factors that's working against that a bit with the South American supplies and so far continuing sluggish Chinese buying, although there are promises for purchases, so we'll see if that actually plays out. And I think just over the short term here, the direction is really going to depend heavily on Brazil's rainfall over the next couple weeks or so, and then those adjustments that we could see on Friday from the WASDE report. If we just zoom back real quickly to the corn market, picking out some of the fundamentals there, especially in terms of South America, weather down in Brazil is pretty favorable to central and northern Brazil, although northeast and eastern are still a bit drier than normal, but there is time for that to recover. And then in terms of export competitiveness, we are currently competitive against global suppliers. We still have strong competition, but currently competitive. And in terms of China imports, their cuts, China's sharply lower import projection is reducing the potential of upside for U.S. exports in 25-26. So we'll see if those promises that were negotiated actually come into fruition. In terms of soybeans, and similar story, picking out some of the more week-to-week fundamentals here, it's estimated that Brazil's planting progress is around 61% complete, slower than last year's 67%. So keep an eye on that.
It's Agriculture Today.
In today's tough farm economy, you need to make every dollar count. When choosing your cotton, consider West Texas varieties from Brownfield Seed and Delenning. At only $125 a bag, these West Texas varieties are large seeded varieties that shoot out of the ground and have the yield potential that will have you smiling all the way to the gin. Think outside the box and boost your bottom line with cotton seed from Brownfield Seed and Delenning. Call 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.
This has Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
This is Agriculture Today.
These 25 lead contract 522 and a quarter, but then July harvest, July 26th, hard red winter wheat at 559. So it's about 35 or so, 35, 36 cents higher. And again, that's the, I guess how we might gauge the amount of uncertainty in the market from here out to July.
Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain economist.
No out of the ordinary stories with regard to carry. The wheat futures market for hard red still shows carries, but they're more like 4, 5, 6 cents as opposed to where they had been in the past, not too distant past of, you know, 7, 8, 9 or more or thereabouts in terms of carry from the east to March to May and July. But so we kind of see that as it is. I would say that when you look at the ethanol cash corn prices, that they are in almost all states to the east, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, Ohio, and the like, you're seeing prices above $4 at ethanol plants. So that's some indication of either demand for ethanol on the one hand or the outcome of harvest, whether we're extremely plentiful or not. And so that's, I guess, a positive sign for cash corn markets going forward and really probably an indicator of what the market at least thinks it's perceiving with regard to actual U.S. corn harvest results this go around. So interesting to watch the cash markets. Cash corn at elevators in Kansas, the highest bid, we had one or two bids over $4. Out in Garden City, the top bid about 416, several others about 10, 15 cents below. So at least some higher bids for cash corn, new crop bids for next year. Highest also out there in the Garden City area, Southwest Kansas, about $4.60. Next highest bids, $4.30 in Colby, $4.20 in Salina, and $4.30 in Hutchinson. So interesting now that I don't know that you can say we've turned our attention to next year, but some of the better bid opportunities that we're seeing in corn are their forward contract bids for next harvest. So go figure that. We're also watching as part of the U.S.-China discussions, the pace of exports. And I think anybody that has grain sorghum in Kansas yet to harvest is hoping for a strong recovery in U.S.-China trade, and particularly with regard to grain sorghum. We do have some reports that have come out on the ag wires of China being active, bringing at least one load from the U.S. to China and probably a harbinger, a signal of more to come. So as you and I have talked in past weeks, Shelby, that couldn't come at a better time for U.S. grain sorghum producers that are likely going to have, in a lot of cases, at least decent, if not pretty good harvest yields. And if there was some strength in the basis levels for grain sorghum here in Kansas, for them to consider selling into, that would be a great help for them, no doubt. Soybean bids, cash bids above $10 in the, well, at 1028 top bid in Pittsburgh area, 1023. Salina, 1018, Topeka, 1013 in Hutchinson out to the west. A lot of cases, well, we just don't grow a lot of soybeans, but what bids there are lower than that. And finally, for wheat, do see a cash bid in Salina, $4.52 is the top bid that at least I'd seen in the locations that we watch. $4.42 in Topeka and Hutchinson, and then thereabouts, $4.32 out to the west and in Colby and $4.22 in Pittsburgh. So it's interesting. In Southwest Kansas, I didn't see many bids. Of course, right now, they're bringing in feed grains into those elevators. So it's kind of surprising in Southwest Kansas right now to not see a lot of wheat bids in some of these key locations, especially around the Garden City area. But again, we've got corn to deal with right now, and they just assume not. I'd like to keep things, I guess, as direct and as simple as possible and not have wheat coming into what's pretty strong outcome for corn. So interesting to watch.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.